Vintage Sci-Fi Podcast. Welcome to episode 4 of the Vintage Sci-Fi Podcast. I'm sorry, but I'm not that well today, so I've asked my cloned digital avatar to fill in for me in this introduction. Today, I bring you Australia Advanced, or Dialogues for the Year 2032, a visionary piece from 1832 that transports us to a future Australia filled with technological and cultural advancements. Dialogue 4 is set in the library of an Australian, discussing plans to travel across continents with ease, thanks to the advanced steam packet network. The steam packet Raja represents the pinnacle of maritime technology, facilitating regular and efficient travel between England, India, and Australia. As our characters discuss their plans, we get a glimpse of a world where global connectivity and rapid travel are the norms. We also discover the evolving field of medicine through Dr. Phillips, a character who challenges established medical theories with his progressive views on pulmonary consumption. His new house, practically a museum, and his deep engagement with natural history reflect a society that values scientific curiosity and advancement. The conversation further reveals the sophisticated urban infrastructure of places like Woolloomooloo and the cultural richness of institutions like the Theatre Royal and the Athenaeum. These details paint a picture of a society that has embraced artistic and intellectual pursuits. Stay tuned for the full reading of Australia Advanced, or Dialogues for the Year 2032, Dialogue 4, a chapter that captures the essence of early science fiction and the enduring human spirit of exploration and innovation.
Dialogue 4. Scene, the Library of Australian. Time, forenoon. A. I trust you are not serious in your intention of returning to London by the Rapid. T. Quite serious. The fact is that my good lady at home has been pestering me for 2 or 3 summers to take her to Calcutta, to pay a promised visit to some of her father's friends. Therefore, I must return to prepare for the trip. A. How do you intend going? T. By the Raja steam packet. Steamers now start for the principal cities in India, on the first day of every month, from Falmouth. A. I intend being in Calcutta myself in May, so I may chance to meet you there. T. Not unlikely. Let me see. This is the last day of February. We shall first arrive there about the end of May or beginning of June. But why not go home with me and return to New South Wales by way of India? A. I would be too happy to avail myself of such a shipmate, but I'm sorry that it is entirely out of my power. T. Have you ever been in Old England? A. Only once, about 5 years ago, and then I was so much hurried that I was only a month in the country. T. By the by, the gentleman whom we met yesterday in the Athenaeum goes to England, I've heard, in the same packet with me. You must introduce me to him. A. Which do you mean? We meet so many gentlemen in the reading room that I am at a loss. T. You bowed to him as we entered the long room. He was coming out at the time. A. Oh, Dr. Phillips. I will introduce you by all means. You will find him a very pleasant compagnon de voyage. As a professional man, he possesses considerable talent, but his practice is not very extensive. T. Is he an Australian? A. No. He came from England about 3 years ago, as chief surgeon in one of the London Australian Company's traders. He is fond of broaching new medical opinions, or rather, reviving old theories. A work was published by him the other day on pulmonary consumption, which is in direct opposition to the opinions of the faculty here, and was the occasion of some very bitter remarks in the Sydney Medical Journal for December last. T. What is taking him home? A. An uncle, I believe, has left him 2 or 3 thousands in cash and a small property. He is going home to dispose of it and return to this country. T. That is a theory that anyone could broach. A. I do not think he would return again, but Mrs. P. is an Australian lady, and will not be persuaded to take up her residence in England. T. You say he has little practice here. A. Not much, but he has himself to blame for that. The truth is that the doctor has the Cacoethes carpendi to such a height that the half of his patients would die while he was engaged skinning some bird, pinning a butterfly, assorting materials, and see and see and see. His new house on Woolloomooloo is quite a museum. T, is not Woolloomooloo a native name? A, it is, and one of the finest. T, I have not seen any of the Aborigines in Sydney since I came. A, you have no chance of seeing them either unless you travel a good way into the interior. All the tribes about Sydney have died long ago, but there are plenty about Oatlands, all round to Cape Howe, and in the North Country. If you will take a trip with me to my West Country station, I will show you plenty of blacks. T, the distance is too great. A, only between 700 and 800 miles. T, I must defer it, however. A, I am glad to hear the word defer. That is a half promise to revisit Australia. T, perhaps. Talking of blacks, I noticed a few American Indians amongst the crew of the New London Merchantman, which arrived from Philadelphia 2 days ago. I also noticed a good number of American vessels lying off Parkman's Wharf. You have a considerable traffic with America? Hey, yes, a good deal. They bring us rum and sugar from the West Indies. T. And what are your exports to America? A. Principally wool. A great number of the American merchantmen, however, go round by China and India, and got their cargoes there. T. At any rate, the constant ingress and egress of foreigners will always benefit this colony. A. It makes our salted meat go like chaff before the wind, and fills the right-hand pockets of our graziers and settlers. You know that the Australian salt beef takes precedence of all other salt beefs on the habitable globe. T. I know well that there is no slight grumbling on the part of the contractors for the Navy on this score. You supply all the King's ships on foreign stations with salt beef. A. And have done so for some years. This branch of trade has increased of late years to an enormous extent. Last year we exported to Van Diemen's Land, New Zealand, and the Mauritius nearly 3,000 tierces. T. You are doing wonders, sir. Go on and prosper. A. This island, or continent, or whatever you call it, is rapidly making up its leeway for the long series of years that it remained in dull inanity. T. The progress of Australia must be interesting. A. Necessarily. And it must be a rise and progress too. T. At all events, you may with safety date its decline and fall some few thousand years off, should this world remain so long. A. Great Britain and America are now the only countries in the old world which are still rising in the scale of civilization. T. With this difference, Great Britain has almost attained the highest possible polish. America is yet a diamond, rough set. A. It is of the last importance that Great Britain and her eldest daughter should keep on the best terms with each other, more especially when the other states of the world are in such a fickle humour. T. All grumbling, fighting and quarrelling. There is South America, has as lengthy a list of generals overruling her destinies as she had 2 centuries ago. Germany is harassed with feud and faction. The Emperor of Austria is nomen et praeterea nihil. The republicanism of Spain is an inlet to every excess. France is declining in the scale of nations. Louis XXI is fast following the footsteps of some of his silly ancestors. Russia, spite of her emperor, her St. Petersburg, her Black Sea, and Riga Balsam, is little better than a horde of Scythians. The people of the north, particularly of Norway and Sweden, alone maintain their independence and the honour of their crowns. A. You draw a hopeful picture. T. No less strange than true. By the way, to pass from the affairs of the real world to those of mimic life, I last night visited your Theatre Royal. A. Ah, indeed. And how liked you our Australian theatricals? T. Why, if there is any faith to be put in the opinion of Robertson, Scotland's favoured historian, that a nation... A. We are hardly entitled to that name yet. T. That a people must be considerably advanced in refinement before they acquire a taste for dramatic performances, I should say that Australia has made a striking advancement in this very particular. Whether her refinement has kept pace with this taste for the drama, it is for you to say. A. Taking the word refinement in the sense Robertson intended it should be taken, I would almost say that her taste for the drama has outstripped her refinement. T. Both taste and refinement are, at all events, employed in the decorating of the house. I was much pleased with the simplicity of style, the chaste colouring, the massive chandeliers, and, in short, with the whole affair. A. The drop scene is good, don't you think? T. Very good. The view which it represents is striking and accurate. Port Jackson looks well on canvas, and the principal features of Sydney are ingeniously brought within the compass of a single painting. A. And what think you of the Veluti in Speculum Scroll? T. It is well done and reflects credit on the artist. The supporters, the kangaroo and the emu, are finished to the life, and the emblature, with the colonial motto, Advance Australia, is beautifully done. In some of the shifting scenes, your up-country and river scenery are vividly and, I dare say, faithfully delineated. A. And the actors? T. Very excellent good, as Sir Andrew Aguecheek says. We had Shakespeare's Hamlet performed, and really I must own that the characters of Hamlet and Ophelia were done ample justice to by Miss Parker and Mr. Pearson. A. Miss P. is a native of the colony, and a decided favourite with the Sydney folks. Pearson only arrived from London a month ago, but he has already gained golden opinions from all sorts of men. What afterpiece had you? T. Frederick of Burgundy, which I did not stop to see, having a supper engagement at 11 in the new town. I only waited between the tragedy and afterpiece to hear your very efficient orchestra play one or two popular airs. I also heard them, in the early part of the evening, perform the celebrated overture of Burgess to the German tragedy, in a manner that would not have disgraced Intaglie's celebrated corps de musique in the English opera house. A. I am glad on the whole that you have been pleased with our attempts in this way. T. I certainly did not expect to meet with either so much taste or execution in this part of the world. A. Was the bouse well filled? T. Pretty fair. The boxes were rather crowded about 9 o'clock. By the way, in the stage box tonight, I observed a very fine woman, accompanied by a middle-aged lady and a venerable-looking gentleman. A. Oh, that is our Lord Chief Justice Belmore's family. Miss Belmore is very much admired in the higher circles. T. And deservedly so, I think. I have not seen a sweeter expression of countenance even in England, that land of beauty. A. She is an Englishwoman. T. I thought as much. A. Begging your pardon, my friend, I do not think you thought any such thing. Are you so ignorant as not to know that Barlow, the author of a work on this country published in England, and entitled 5 Years' Residence in Australia and the Adjacent Settlements, says that the higher classes of females in this colony partake more of the Grecian contour of countenance than any of the inhabitants of Europe? T. With all my heart, my good sir, I would not disparage the Australian belles for a trifle. Place aux dames d'Australion, by all means. A. I would not certainly detract from Miss Belmore's charms, but I can assure you we have some very fine women both in Sydney and the country. T. I believe it, nay, I know it. A. Talking of Grecian countenances, how do you like the porch of the Theatre Royal? The pillars are pure Grecian. T. I know not whether they are pure Grecian or not, but they are certainly very handsome and look well from the street. A. Do you know that the Athenaeum and the theatre are built on the site of an old churchyard? T. No, I was not aware of the melancholy fact. A. It is the fact, however. That part of George Street was in former days the receptacle for the dead, and where literature holds her reign and Thalia amuses her votaries, was once a charnel house. T. Singular enough revolution, certainly. A. When do you expect the Rapid will start for England? T. She will sail positively on Sunday first, I was told at the steam packet office. A. Then I will see you not at my country residence to spend tomorrow and the next day. T. I will not promise. A. You must not disappoint me. Exeunt. To be continued.
Don't forget to subscribe and add the Vintage Sci-Fi Podcast to your favorites. Thank you for listening.
Vintage Sci-Fi Podcast.